Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Bingham OX.
Listen anytime, anywhere.
Get the radio.com app today.
Mr. President, you're driving us crazy. You're winning too much.
I'm a man. I am an anchor man. I'm a man who discovered the wheel and built the Eiffel Tower out of metal and bronze. That's what kind of man I am.
Government is not the solution to our problems. Government is the problem.
I got into broadcasting because I like to give. Sometimes I found myself hurting from giving too much.
Now, Mark Reardon.
Mark Reardon, ladies and gentlemen, please put your hands together and give a warm welcome to this guy.
On KMOX.
Yes, back from the woods of Howard County, Missouri, where I was slaying helpless animals over the weekend, or at least trying to. I did better than last year. That's what I'll tell you. Dave, do you remember the story from last year?
I do. I think that was haunting you for a long time.
Well, it was haunting me for a long time. First of all, ladies and gentlemen, glad to be back. I'll tell you what, right now, I'm going to say, where's that button right here? Where's the fake news thing here? There we go.
You are fake news.
No, I really enjoyed, you know, I could say I'm glad to be back, Dave, but I'm not glad to be back.
I
enjoyed my 3 days off here post-hunting. I did get a nice little buck on Saturday afternoon in Howard County.
So you redeemed yourself.
I did redeem myself. So for those people not playing along at home last year, and I every time I tell this story, I just wish to God that I was making it up, but I'm not. I missed a deer at like 20 yards. It might have been shorter than that. It was kind of one of these steep angles, and I've been running through that. I told you Friday before I left, that's been running through my head over and over again. Hunters can relate to this. I never saw the woods the way I saw them on Saturday morning and Saturday afternoon. So many deer everywhere. Really, the bucks chasing the does. They get a little busy. You know, they're looking for mates, Dave. We can keep this, you know, adult and PG-13. And it was crazy. It was really cold. It was like 17 degrees when I got in the deer stand on Saturday. But I had a great time. Got back on Sunday afternoon. My buddy Carlin Yeager, after I'd left, got a huge, huge deer. And he's always very patient, and that paid off. And then the last few days, I pretty much did. Let me think what I did the last 3 days. Oh, yeah, nothing. Pretty much nothing.
I'm kind of jealous.
Watched a bunch of movies. I had to catch up for some award stuff coming up. And
what a rough life.
Yeah, I know. It was really bad. Anyway.
So how far away was this one that you shot?
About 150 yards.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So maybe a little less than that, but sure. It wasn't that tough of a shot. And I don't know what I did last year, but.
Well, congrats. So
thank you. Bringing
some deer jerky.
We will have deer meat hopefully by Thanksgiving.
There you go.
I will keep you posted on that for sure. I can even send some along. You know who's really happy this morning is the meteorologists of St. Louis, because they get up and they're thinking, man, did we get this right? Did we get this right? Did we get this right? Kind of got it right, Templeton, didn't you?
What do you mean get up? I stayed up all night thinking that.
Well, that's probably true too, right?
I mean, it's the truth. Look, we have a forecast, and we all know predicting the future is tough, and you want to be right because this impacts people's lives. Schools were called off. Some people didn't go to work, and you know, you just feel horrible if people went out of their way to cancel all that and then you didn't get anything.
Well, I got a good school closing story. So we get my daughter, you know, my other kids are at Mizzou, right? So I don't have to worry about them. And my daughter is in daycare. And we get an email from the daycare yesterday, Goddard, and they do a great job over there, that says, hey, we're, just to update you on the snow policy. And you know what, Steve, I was thinking about this. I don't think this ever even kicked in last year at all. And I never remember even shoveling the driveway one time. But so they said in the email, we're going to send this is the part that I didn't pay attention to. We're going to send a test alert out. If you don't get the test alert, let us know. Well, didn't remember the test alert part. So got in the car this morning, actually let her plan the snow a little bit, and her mom works at home part-time, so I'm like, well, we'll take her up to school, you know, so she can hang out. Well, there was nary a car in the parking lot, so apparently the test alert that I was supposed to get failed, and I did not call. That was on me. So I drove all the way up there and had no idea. But yeah, I mean, the school's closed this morning. I think everything was fine by 10 in the morning, but I get the precaution, right?
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, we were below freezing. So last night when it started, I mean, it stuck and the roads were bad. And I drove home 11:30 midnight and the roads were really bad. I was going about 30 miles an hour on an interstate. So I understand why superintendents would see that and say, you know what, let's just not mess with it.
Yeah, no, I get that. So across the area, I'm thinking we maybe got 4 or 4.5 inches out in the high ridge area. But I just heard Carol report some of these totals. Some areas got 9 inches?
Yeah, double that in some places. So, in fact, that is our last report we had from Spotter in High Ridge, 4 to 5 inches. Some of the higher totals, they're all west of St. Louis. So Wentzville, western St. Charles County, 8 inches. Just west of that into Wright City, 9.5. Washington, Missouri, 8 to 9 inches. Now, I haven't heard back from the airport where the official total is. As of 10 a.m., it was 3.6. It's actually still snowing there now. Other places out west already have sunshine, but the vestiges of this snow or just kind of hanging on around the airport. If that total at the airport can get to 4 inches, it would be the second biggest snowfall this early in the season on record in St. Louis, and the biggest this early in 67 years. So it's a big deal, and I think we're probably going to end up around 4 inches or more, but we'll see. I have to wait for that.
Yeah, I like it. You know, we've talked about this before. I'd rather have a few inches like this other than just a light covering or something. If you're going to make the roads messy, you might as well go out.
And
I think this is good snow. And I think it wasn't too bad, right? Yeah. People were able to get around. They'll be fine this afternoon as well.
And I'll say one thing. Just watch for that refreeze in the evening, especially sidewalks, driveways that don't get treated. Any melting, we're at 33 now. So any melting is going to refreeze when we get below freezing again this evening. So just watch for some icy spots. But the storm's pretty much winding down and done with.
One of the great things about being in the woods on Saturday morning is because of the, they got a little snow in that area on Friday. You know, we did too, but there was some that was sticking because it was so cold. And then the ground was so hard that when usually one of the challenges that you have as a hunter, Steve, and those people who hunt will know this, is the squirrels drive you crazy out there. You hear the squirrels rustling and you think, oh, that's a deer. Mm-hmm. Now, there's a distinct difference between the sounds, but that doesn't mean you don't get a little excited when you hear rustling. Well, yeah. It was so apparent with the crunchy ground that it was a deer. That made it very easy.
I wish
it was a little wider on the ground.
Yards?
What's that?
So easy that you still missed from 20
yards. Well, that was last year. Let's move forward to this year. This year I did fine,
great,
okay?
Story.
I will prove it to you with some deer sausage or some jerky next week. No, I did fine. It was a good time. And, you know, wasn't for being 17 degrees, wasn't too bad. I geared up. Yeah. I looked like the Michelin man. And I think hunters from across Missouri just had to deal with it. But I've told you this before. I'd rather be out there when it's cold than
when
it's
really
warm. By the way,
speaking of the cold and the snow, and some people have been thinking, you know, if it's this cold, this snowy, this early, is the winter really going to be that bad? Now, past performance doesn't dictate the future, but the snowiest November on record had about 11 inches. After that, the rest of the season only had 7 inches, no big storms. So it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to have a bad winter. And I went ahead and looked, Thanksgiving's on our 7-day forecast now, and I've got upper 50s, and we may be in the 60s. It's going to be much more mild.
Well, you know, the original goal for me, did I mention this at the top or not? Because my brain isn't working very well. You know, I took these 3 days off. I had a few days that I needed to burn before the holidays. I have a couple of days off, and I thought, you know what? I'm going to try to do this earlier in November rather than later, because I thought there's a window to play golf a few more times. Well, kind of blew that because that wasn't going to happen in the last few days, unfortunately. You know, the snow, what you just said about the snow totals, I tell this story every once in a while. There was one December, I'm thinking 99, 2000, when I was up in the People's Republic of Wisconsin in Milwaukee. The month of December, it snowed 50, it was either 52 or 56 inches just for the month. But it never really snowed much after that the entire winter. So you had this buildup of snow that was there, arguably, until probably May, but it didn't snow a whole lot after, you know, that big first blast in December. And I think a lot of people probably had to dig out the snow, you know, whether it was the snow shovels or the scrapers for the cars, and they hadn't even seen them for a while because of last year being so mild.
Yeah. In fact, you know, around here last year, we only had 7 inches for the whole snow season. So some people have seen more snow just from this storm than we got all of last season.
Yes, yes, I know I did. And my daughter, who is 3.5, really hasn't seen real snow for the first time, was able to go out and play and do a little sledding and do snow angels, and she had a blast. She's still having a blast out there
right now, actually.
All right, Steve, well, thank you so much.
Take care, buddy.
Keep us posted.
Yeah, we'll talk a little later in the afternoon.
We'll talk a little later tonight. I don't know if I'm hoping for another big blast of winter, but this wasn't too bad. All right, so a lot to get to this afternoon, and we're almost up to Friday again, hard to believe. So we have a Reardon Roundtable tomorrow. Great panel. Former House Speaker Tim Jones, John Gaskin, who was just elevated to the NAACP president here in St. Louis, and Jane Duker. And then Christina Bianco, who's a comedian and an actress, is really, really funny. She'll kind of lighten things up for us in the 3 o'clock hour tomorrow. Then we're into Thanksgiving week next week, and I will be here. We'll even have a Reardon Roundtable next Friday as well. So one of the bits of news that happened while I was out here the last couple of days was, and I think I hinted toward this last week, and I know we talked about it on the Roundtable, is that the, well, he started off as the official state senator of the Mark Reardon Show, Eric Schmidt. He then became the official state office holder of the Mark Reardon Show. We'll have to talk about whether or not there's a title change outside of the one that he's making from state treasurer to attorney general. Governor Parson yesterday naming Eric Schmidt the new attorney general to replace Josh Hawley when he takes off for Washington. I like the move a lot. We'll chat with Eric. Doug High, our friend from CNN, is going to weigh in on a bunch of stuff, including that recount in Florida and the new leadership in the House and the GOP, which was decided upon today. Steve Futterman's going to join us this afternoon. I got a whole bunch more. I have a couple of really good... Let's see if I can find these things. I never know... Half the time, I never know where I put my... my stories, but I'll find them. There's a great story from the Washington Post today. I keep turning the mic off. Dave, was I turning the mic off there? The hell's wrong? They've only been gone for 3 days and I can't even... I did it again, didn't I? It was the paper. Wow, that's really bad. I'll just give you the headline right now because I don't have time to get into this, but I thought this was hilarious. Actually, there's two headlines today. One... Not a single G20 country is close to hitting the CO2 emission targets that were dictated by the Paris Climate Change Accord, which we pulled out of. So all those things that they were promising to do, not one country is close to hitting that target. And then this one, and this is not, you know, this is not fake news. It's not in some sort of right-wing, wacko, climate-denying, science-denying publication. This is in the esteemed Washington Post with the headline this morning, "Scientists acknowledge key errors in study of how fast the oceans are warming." A major study claimed the oceans were warming much faster than previously thought, but researchers now say they can't necessarily make that claim. Well, that's the very definition.
You are fake news.
That's right. All that and more to come this afternoon.
Local reporters to cover local news. St. Louis's news, traffic, and weather.
Welcome back. Big news here the last couple of days. There's some shuffling of the state office holders. State Treasurer Eric Schmidt has been named as the next attorney general because Josh Hawley, who is the current attorney general, won the election against Claire McCaskill last week, and he is heading to Washington, D.C. So the new attorney general, the newly named attorney general, the former or soon to be former, this is hard to keep track of, State Treasurer Eric Schmidt is with me this afternoon. But we've got to do this, of course.
And now, the official state office holder of the Mark Reardon Show. It's Eric Schmidt, official state office holder of the Mark Reardon Show.
I guess that still fits, doesn't it? I mean, it is Attorney General is a state office, so we don't have to upgrade that particular show open, do we, Mr. Attorney General?
No, you do not. See the efficiency by which your production team over there does this is amazing. So
well,
yes.
Well, congratulations on the new gig. I do want to point out just at the beginning of the segment, if you look at the pattern that has been established here, the official state office holder in the Mark Reardon Show now elevating once again to a new position, the official constitutional law expert of the Mark Reardon Show, Josh Hawley, being elevated to a new position. I'm just saying, Eric, you know, that's not an accident, I don't think.
You're paving the path for so many people, Mark. It's like that, what was that, in Groundhog Day, that you got into broadcasting because you like to give, and you sometimes are hurt because you're giving so much. So
that's what I do. You know, in all seriousness, though, I just want to say congratulations from deep down in my heart. I've known you for a long time here, and we've been friends, and I thought that good things were going to happen. But let's ask this position. When Governor Parson comes to you, and this has been rumored for a little while, you were out there campaigning for Josh Hawley. What made this, in your mind, the right fit?
Well, we've known each other for that. Thank you for that, by the way. We've known each other for a while, and at the end of the day, I grew up in a working class neighborhood, and I didn't know any lawyers growing up. I saw how hard my dad worked. He worked seven days a week in the midnight shift. I saw how hard my friends' parents worked. And I came to realize at a young age that their ability to pursue their dreams was directly tied to the vision of the founders, right? That we're granted these rights to pursue our dreams, pursue happiness. It's granted by God, and government is just our shared project to protect those rights. And so I saw lawyers having a important role in that, defending people, representing people, fighting for people's rights. And so I wanted to be a lawyer. And I was the first person to go to college out of high school, got a scholarship to law school, was on the law review. And that was kind of the beginning of my love of the law. And, you know, and then as a father, as I've talked about before with Stephen and his challenges, you know, I wanted to have an impact and got into public service. So those two things kind of come together in this moment, right? And so I'm incredibly grateful to be able to be the lawyer for 6 million Missourians. I'm grateful to the governor for giving me that opportunity, having faith in me. We've known each other a while. He mentioned in his announcement that, you know, that confidence that you can develop with people as you see them in situations over time was one of the reasons he made the choice. So I'm just very thankful. I am excited about it. It is a job that you can really sink your teeth into and represent the people of the state.
Yeah, so, you know, on that note, how do you see this job for you moving forward and what priorities there would be? Obviously, it's a bit of a unique situation because you're coming in, I guess, midterm here because Josh Hawley's been there for a couple of years. I don't know if you've even had an opportunity to get a handle on where that office is on particular, you know, legal actions. But what are your thoughts there?
Well, it's a fair question. I think my focus right now is, we have about 45 days for a transition. I got the call actually from the governor on Sunday. I was at White House Retreat. It's a silent retreat house. Some people may know the Jesuits run in South County, and it's a silent retreat. So I broke my vow of silence to take the call. I think, good Lord, I think we'll understand that.
Yes, I think you're fine.
So I got the call, and then immediately later on that evening, I talked to Attorney General Hawley, and we had a great conversation. He and I developed a close personal relationship. I think that'll help with the transition as you get caught up to speed with literally tens of thousands of cases. There's hundreds of lawyers in that office. And so I want to put first things first and get a firm grasp of what's happening right now, what the pending litigation is all about, but also get around the state and listen, talk to prosecutors, talk to law enforcement. You're the chief law enforcement officer for the state. So I think listening is kind of an underappreciated, undervalued attribute of leadership, and that'll be my focus. Listening to people, getting input, and then moving forward. So we'll have plenty of time to talk about those other things. But right now, it's getting a handle on the cases and the folks in the office.
Now, have you thought, you know, the one big issue that is on everyone's minds or most people's minds, this became apparent from the election. It was clear here in Missouri with the ads that Senator McCaskill was running in the PACs as well against Josh Hawley because of the Obamacare lawsuit. So when it comes to health care, have you thought about that particular issue or that lawsuit?
Well, clearly, people having access to health care is an important issue, but as it relates to that specific piece of litigation, it would be inappropriate for me to comment on a pending litigation, especially not having reviewed the pleadings or talking to the team over there. There'll be plenty of time for that, and I'm sure that, and it's a fair question, and we'll address that in due time. But for right now, I need to get in there and visit with the lawyers who are working on some of these cases and talk to them about all the matters before the office.
I don't think you will, but let me ask the question. Will you have any kind of say, or I guess you can offer a recommendation on who would replace you as state treasurer?
Well, I am very respectful. It's the governor's job, his constitutional duty to appoint these offices. If he asks, I'll do everything I can to help him. He has done an incredible job. I mean, taking over in unusual circumstances in June, he's a humble guy, a regular guy who's taken the job seriously, listened, gotten around the state, talked to a lot of people. I'm certainly grateful for the faith that he's given me in this office, and I'll, you know, help in any way I can in that search.
Well, again, congratulations. There's a part of me that worries here, and, you know, we know each other well enough that I don't think this will be an issue. But one of the things that I've said, you remember, I think you heard me or somebody told you years ago, I said, you know, most of the people that are in politics and elected officials are not very normal. I've always felt that you're normal, and I say that as a compliment. But one of the things that we've been able to do over the years is just have a relationship, and when the time calls for it, get serious on issues, but also have a little fun. And I don't think you're going to change, but this is like one of those roles that seems to be elevating the profile. And it's obviously a very serious position and has a lot of responsibility. But we don't want to lose the Eric Schmidt that we've come to love and appreciate, you know?
Don't worry about that. I'm laughing at that. Don't worry. I'm the same guy I've always been. I'm still going to as passionate about the Cardinals as I always. I mean, nothing's going to change. It's just a new job, but I will take those same values that I've had in these other offices and try to be effective and work with other people and get results for the 6 million Missourians now that I'm their lawyer. So I take that seriously, but I'm not going to change it. I'm too old for that. I guess I'm the youngest Republican constitutional officer at 43, but I'm not going to change. Don't worry about that.
Awesome. I didn't think so, but I had to throw it out there. Do I have to call you General from now on? Eric Schmidt, General Schmidt, Attorney General
That
Schmidt?
Would be appropriate, Mark.
Yes,
yeah,
General. General, yes. General, and do not look me in the eye when I come in the studio, right?
Eric is fine.
All right.
Eric is
fine. Hey, we'll talk soon. Again, congratulations.
All right, Mark. Thanks.
That is, I keep messing up his title. Even when he was state treasurer, I would call him state senator. Now I'll probably call him state treasurer, but the new attorney general, newly named attorney general, and obviously some political implications. Let's break some of those down. Look, Mike Parson's playing a little bit of defense here, a little bit of offense, because if you're looking at a guy that came in here a year and a half into Eric Greitens' term, he's going to seemingly run for re-election. Would he be challenged by a Republican in a primary? Probably not, although if he would be moving forward, it might be a guy like Eric Schmidt. Unlikely now that he's been appointed to attorney general. But if you look at, and I don't want to denigrate the role of other important state office holders like the state treasurer or the state auditor or, secretary of state. And by the way, Jay Ashcroft was vying for this as well. I think they were lobbying for him. There was a certain element or portion of folks that were hoping that Jay Ashcroft would get this. And Kurt Schaefer's name was in the mix too. Of course, he lost to Josh Hawley in the primary, but had a lot of experience in this particular area, was a prosecutor. I think he worked for Jay Nixon at some point in the past. So his name was in the mix here, but it's a good move for Eric. And you think about the prominence that this affords him outside of doing the actual job. I like to speak candidly about this. And you got a guy who is now as attorney general for 2 years, let's say he wins re-election. He's positioned very well for the future, no matter what might happen, whether he wants to run for the United States Senate seat that is held by Roy Blunt, should that become vacated, or governor in the future. So for Eric Schmidt, this is a big win. Now, as far as who's going to be the next state treasurer, not that anybody really cares about that, but I do think it's important to have, this would be my take if Governor Parson's listening, and I think he knows this as well. I don't think it's something that would be a big secret. I think a woman would be important just because, not that I'm interested in quotas, but if you have a little bit of balance with these state elected or even non-elected office holders, I think that would be a good thing. Vicky Hartzler's name has been mentioned. She's a congresswoman from the other side of the state. I don't really think that she would do that. However, look, it's different to be in the minority than the majority. So she might look at that. There's a senator by the name of Sandy Crawford. I've even heard Brenda Talent's name mentioned in the mix from the Show Me Institute, the wife of former Senator Jim Talent. So we'll see what happens with that and whoever might be named state treasurer, but a big move for former state Senator Schmidt to be the new attorney general. It's 2:30 at KMOX. What am I doing here, Dave? Going right to news, you think? All right, let's do a little bit of business here. Doug High standing by. We'll get a little national political update and talk about some of the things that I've missed even here the past few days when I've been out.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, fresh off his engagement announcement to actress and comedian Sarah Silverman, Doug High back with us this afternoon.
Well, with that Augustine introduction, I should tell you, I'm in California, and I'm actually going to see Sarah later today.
Wait. Seriously?
Yeah.
So let's get people, before you tell me about that, I'm very curious, but the reason that I joked about this is there was a television show that Sarah has on, it's on Netflix or Hulu, it's one of those.
Hulu,
right. And then you went out on a, kind of a date with her for the TV show a few weeks ago. She's trying to bring people together of different perspectives, and you were one of the guinea pigs.
Yeah, exactly. And so I'm going to be in Los Angeles tonight, and it just so happens that the wrap party for the season is tonight, and they invited me, and I said, well, I'm actually going to be there. So I'll report back.
Yes, well, send Sarah our love. I am a fan. I'm not a big fan of her politics, but I am a fan of her work. So we haven't spoken since the midterms. Let's do a little bit of a wrap-up from there. I've been out the last few days, Doug. When I left last Friday, I think things might have been looking a little bit better for Republicans, and then Arizona, you know, sort of wrapped up, and we're still worried about Florida. Is it a wash what happened last week? Was it a purple wave? Was it a puddle? What was it?
No, I think it was a very bad result for Republicans. You know, we were fortunate that we had a map in the Senate that favored us, but it looks like we're going to gain one seat, which in the scheme of things is fine, but really not where we need to be. And given the House results, governor's races, state houses, it was a bad result for Republicans. And if you're this administration, you know that every House committee for the next 2 years is going to be spending most of their time investigating everything that the administration has done. And that's a brave new world for them.
Hey, we did our part here in Missouri, Doug High. You know that, right?
I do. In fact, I was speaking to a group today. I think the election was less of a wave than it was a continuing of the realignment that we've seen with red areas getting redder, blue areas getting bluer, and really urban and suburban versus rural. And one of the examples I used, and forgive me if I mispronounce it, Saline County in Missouri.
That's it. You got it.
In 2012, Claire McCaskill won by 22.5 points. Last week, she lost it by 21.4 points. That is a real problem for Democrats.
Yeah, I'd say that's a big problem, but we also saw, you know, and I pointed this out in the last week, you see this expansion of the Democrat vote in the suburbs. I mean, both parties have issues from the opposite ends of the spectrum.
Absolutely. I think the Republican issues are a bit more existential and a bigger problem for the GOP. But if Democrats think they can write off the rural vote, it's not just, you know, a few counties in Missouri. It's, you know, look at Minnesota, where if you're a rural voter in Minnesota, you're more likely to be a Democrat or a Republican than a Democrat. Just as if you're a suburban voter in Arizona, as we just saw, you're more likely to be a Democrat now than a Republican.
Let me play what you said this morning about Nancy Pelosi on CNN.
In 2010, I helped spearhead the Fire Pelosi campaign at the RNC. One of the reasons that we wanted to fire Pelosi was because she was so darn effective and she put Obamacare through. Democrats would be foolish to cast her aside, I think.
So my perspective would be for Republicans, Nancy Pelosi and having her, you know, image and her style of leadership up there, Doug, is a good thing for Republicans. But you're saying it's a good thing for Democrats because she gets things done.
I think it may be best for everybody in that regard. Look, you know, the analogy I typically use about her is I'm a New York Yankees fan, and I hate David Ortiz. And I hate David Ortiz because he hits home runs against us. And you don't hate the player who strikes out against your team. And look, Pelosi, part of the reason that we won the House in 2010 was because of Pelosi. But, you know, it was Obamacare. And she got that through with one vote. It was an extremely tough lift. She is very skilled, and yes, Republicans can raise money off of her. Her image can help Republicans, but Democrats need somebody who knows how to get things done and is going to temper. I would recommend to them to temper, you know, this drive for all things impeachment, all things investigation, and that's Pelosi. She knows how to do this. Now, the Democrats, I think, have a problem that their top leadership is all over 75 years old, and it hasn't changed in 10 years. But they just picked up 35, maybe more seats. That's not a great argument to get rid of the person who's at the top of your party.
You know, the Ed Rendell was on, former governor of Pennsylvania, was on last week on election night. He was over on Fox, and he was saying his advice to these Democrats would be, you know, legislate, 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 not investigate, investigate, investigate. We certainly have an indication that the latter is going to happen. But I wonder how people will respond to that. And I always hate to break these things down into politics and what election is next. But that's what we do, Doug. And, you know, 2020 will be looming in the not too distant future. So I don't know. You know, divided government seemingly is something that we like in this country. It's not uncommon. I'm rather fascinated to see what kind of things they can get done here with a Nancy Pelosi and a Mitch McConnell. Nothing along the lines of tax cuts or, you know, entitlement reform, but there's going to be legislation that's going to be passed, obviously.
Yeah, certainly. And, you know, I don't think that we'll see a ton of, you know, big ticket items. I'm concerned about the potential for, you know, another shutdown if we're not passing appropriations bills and so forth, which we could see in the lame duck Congress for that matter as well. But this also, I think, you know, presents Trump with two opportunities. One, to at least for a while have House Democrats be the foil. So we should keep in mind that the second there's a Democratic front runner for president, Nancy Pelosi is not the center of attention for us anymore. But also, this is an opportunity for Donald Trump to show us that he's the deal maker in chief that he's always said he is. And, you know, if he cuts the big deal on infrastructure or even something bigger like immigration or guns, where I would argue that the Republican base would trust Donald Trump to cut a deal that they wouldn't trust a president, Jeb Bush or Scott Walker, to make, then he can show that he's the great deal maker. And I think that's an opportunity for him.
Yeah, I do too. And I think that that'll be interesting to watch. But the Democrats aren't going to want to give him or the Republicans any kind of victory. Infrastructure in particular is something I think is important. I think people feel like they want to see some action on that. Where are you, before I let you go here, where are you on the whole Jim Acosta deal?
Look, I think everybody's gotten too worked up. But I'm very troubled about a White House that can deny somebody their pass and access to the White House, and basically do so because they don't like their reporting. And you know, the hard pass means that you're always allowed to go. And what the White House has countered is, well, Jim could apply for a daily pass. And I would be very nervous of getting in a situation where a reporter is on a day-to-day basis as to whether or not they have access to cover this president or any president because the White House doesn't like their coverage. If you don't want to respond to their questions, don't respond to their questions. That's a different issue.
I agree with that. I guess that, you know, I try to think of the times when I was a reporter, a journalist, an anchor, and if I would have gotten into a room where I was called upon, asked a couple of questions, would not give that microphone up, and basically have a confrontation with whoever I was covering, I don't think that that would be something that would be deemed too cool. But with Jim Acosta, because it's President Trump, everyone lines up, I think, on his side. I'm not, along those lines, I'm not comfortable either with passes being revoked or limitations to coverage, because I think that that's not the direction we should be heading in a republic or a democracy. But we'll see if cooler heads prevail on this deal.
I mean, they usually don't, unfortunately.
No, they don't. All right, Doug, well, tell Sarah Silverman we said hi, report back, and we'll talk to you soon.
We'll do it. Thank you.
Doug High with us this afternoon. I think that's funny that, you know, I was just kind of joking at the beginning there about his date. If you missed that segment, we talked about it a couple of weeks ago. I was sitting in here one day, Dave and I were, and we look up on Ellen, because it was on whatever station airs Ellen, and there's a picture of Doug High and some video of him sitting down to have dinner with Sarah Silverman. We thought that was kind of funny. I had not heard about that. But Doug's one of our regular awesome contributors here that we pay. How much do we pay that guy? Oh, we don't pay him, do we? That's CNN. This is what the great thing is. Like, CNN picks up the bill for Jennings and for him, and Fox News pays for Grossauer, and we get the benefit because... And I don't think it's because they like me. I think it's because they like KMOX and they like the Cardinals.
Get your news now and talk about it tonight at 10 with Ryan Recker on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Hey, Steve Futterman out in Los Angeles covering wildfires right after the top of the hour. You know who's weighed in on the CNN controversy with Jim Acosta? Larry King. And in other news this afternoon, Larry King is still alive, ladies and gentlemen. I always thought that when he was, like, doing the show in the latter years, he was like that. It was like that movie Weekend at Bernie's, where Larry really wasn't there. He was just kind of being held up, and there was a puppet, and someone was talking for him. But look, He is a legend in this business. I always liked it. You know, I don't even know how many people remember this, but Larry King was the king of late night radio. That's where he really made his mark, and he was really good at it, and he opened up the doors for a lot of people that came after him. But he was on something called the Law and Crime Network. I think this is something that Dan Abrams also started up. And he was talking about CNN and MSNBC and Fox News and Jim Acosta. Here's what he said about Acosta and what happened with that dust-up.
Jim was a little out of line. I wouldn't have gone that far. He answered one or two questions, then he didn't want to answer anymore. You got a room full of people, all of whom have the right to ask questions. Jim might have gone a little too far. The president kept going back to him, referring, you could run CNN, who should run CNN? To me, you know what this was? Eighth grade. Was the playground. It's my ball, and I want to play today in the team. It was childish.
Well, he's right about that. I mean, they both were acting immature. But the reason I can't give Acosta a free pass, and I try not to give the president a free pass, is because of the way that he was behaving. And it wasn't just an ordinary circumstance where he was disagreeing with the president. He was preaching. He was lecturing. I played that clip after this all happened last week, where he was insisting on his network that he was trying to instruct the president that the video that played or the commercial that was somewhat controversial of the caravan was racist. Well, it's not his job. As I said at the time, it's not Jim Acosta's job to tell anyone what was racist. He can report on something being racist according to attribution. So I was taught this in journalism school. So according to CNN, it's racist. I don't know. According to whoever is saying that it's racist. According to liberal activists, it's racist. But it's not his job to go up there and pound his fist on the podium and say, hey, this is racist. I want your reaction. So he was trying to make this story part of himself and be about himself. That's what Larry King said.
I've been in the business 61 years, and I always felt that the guest was the star. The person you're asking the question of is, for want of a better term, is the star. At a Trump press conference, Trump is the star. You try to learn as much as you can from him, but you're not bigger than him. It isn't about you. It's about him.
Well, it is about you if you're Jim Acosta. We've come to recognize this. Now, I thought this was interesting, and I don't know the circumstances that, you know, Larry King left CNN. He dominated that network for a long time, and I think his ratings were very, very good, and then he got shuffled out, as do a lot of people who are aging in this business. But he talked about how CNN is not a news network.
CNN has become, as is Fox and MSNBC, Trump networks. There's the anti-Trump network, the partially anti-Trump network, and the pro-Trump network.
I don't think that I can disagree with him on that. Although I really would say that Fox News during the day, and I can't say this about CNN, because I think during the day, CNN is all anti-Trump. During the day, Fox News is rather mixed. I really do think they have a pretty good mixture. And I'm saying this based on a lot of experience in the last couple of months after pretty much ditching CNN altogether because I get so sick of their tone, that there is a distinct anti-Trump faction, if you will, on MSNBC. I mean, they don't even try to hide it. Same thing on CNN in the other direction. Well, no, anti in that direction. And on Fox, certainly leans pro-Trump, but not completely.
But they're not news networks. And not news networks.
You had mentioned that. You said CNN stopped doing news a long time ago.
Yeah, they do. They do pundits. A typical CNN show is 8 guests. He had opinion, he has opinion, he has opinion. Like, I was watching one day and there was terrible storms in the east. It wasn't a hurricane, but there's really bad weather in the east. Roads were clogged. And I had to wait till the CBS News at 6:30 to see that story.
Yeah.
So they stopped doing news.
The argument to that would be, look, it's a ratings game, right? Who can get the most ratings? So if they're getting a lot of ratings by focusing on Trump, what do you think about that?
A news organization is supposed to lead or follow. What is it? My definition is a news organization leads.
That's what I would hope for as well.
I've always worked under that premise, that a news organization leads the news, doesn't follow the news, if you want.
Well, here's the problem with, and I'm not sure who that was asking the questions there from Dan Abrams' network, this new Law and Crime Network. And I don't even know, I don't even know if it's on cable. Dave, do you know? Is that something? Who knows? It could be just an online thing. But anyway, regardless, Yeah, the argument can be made that this is a ratings game. I'm part of this as well. I've worked in broadcasting my entire life. You have to get ratings or you simply can't survive. You don't have advertisers. I would not have a job. But in CNN's case, here's a little secret. It ain't working very well because their ratings are terrible. They're abysmal. And I've never really been able to understand this. And if you're going to go all out and define yourself as the anti-Trump network, you best be doing it a little bit better than you are right now. Fox, and I said this last week, and you looked at the midterm elections, Fox has a bigger audience than MSNBC, CNN, and who else am I thinking about? Certainly those two combined. Am I missing someone out there in that mix? It's not even close. And CNN's tried to tweak and make changes and put different people in there. It simply doesn't work. And I think one of the reasons is they've lost so much credibility. It's a mixture. Some people aren't going to go there because they don't like Don Lemon or they don't like whoever. I mean, Wolf Blitzer is kind of an outlier now. He's the only serious news guy there. And I'd say he even employs a fair amount of bias. But outside of Wolf Blitzer, who else do you have that's just delivering news on that station? Nobody. Not during the day, certainly. But it is a situation. You know, I think it's a very confusing time for media. But if you're talking about ratings and that's your niche, MSNBC got to give credit to, not a huge audience, but they've figured their lane out. CNN doesn't know what their lane should be. And if they can figure it out, they best get better ratings than they are right now because they're terrible.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.